Dudes and Vibes podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Dudes and Vibes podcast. Dudes and Vibes.
Hey everyone, Hal Lublin here. This week we're going to be doing things a little bit differently on Tights and Fights. We've got two amazing interviews that we can't wait for you to hear. Later on in the show, you'll hear Danielle Radford and me speaking with Lucha Underground champion Marty the Moth. This happened courtesy of Gamma Ray TV at San Diego Comic-Con. We'll talk all about his start on Tough Enough, his time in the temple, and so much more. There was so much hugging. But first, here's Mike Eagle speaking with Aubrey Sitterson and Chris Moreno. They're the creators of the brand new release, The Comic Book Story of Professional Wrestling.
Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm Mike Eagle, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Aubrey Sitterson.
Hey, friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. We just had a book come out this week. I'm great.
Oh, no. And my new friend, Chris Moreno.
Hello.
How are you, Chris?
I'm very excited to be here. I actually listened to when Aubrey was on last.
So you know what to expect.
No, I mean, I feel like it's all fair game at this point. I'm the unknown factor in this.
You're the X factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a whole podcast. We're actually just going to ask you what you have for breakfast over and over again.
That's cool.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll try and come up with different things every day.
There we go.
That's good.
You're going to break me down.
Creativity.
Yeah.
But Chris and Aubrey are the creators of the comic book Story of Professional Wrestling, which details a bunch of the history behind wrestling, touching on everything from its time as legitimate sport to how it's influenced modern politics. The book is out now, and what an amazing thing you guys made.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
When did you guys first, when did you first start working on it?
I heard from our editor at 10 Speed about 2 years to the day. Wow. Of when this thing came out. Wow. That's when like the ball first started rolling on it. He came to me and asked, if this is something I'd be interested in. And the first step was putting together kind of like a rough outline as like by way of a pitch. Wow. It's part of a line of books that they do, the comic book story of whatever. They've done video games and beer,
yeah,
and baseball. I think there's yeah. I don't want to list one that's maybe not announced yet. But gotcha. I don't want to get in trouble. But they do a line of them, and they want to do wrestling next. And he reached out to me, and that was the start of it. And that was about 2 years ago now. Yeah. And then Chris got started. I mean, so I started writing the script in 2018, 16. It's so like early 2017. Right. I probably started writing the scripts, mm-hmm. and then you were working on the art by
June of that.
Oh, was it that late?
June or July. Yeah, because they had done approvals on scripts,
right,
and everything. I mean, I was itching and raring to go, but...
Yeah, but it was a lot. I mean, it's 170 pages, and they needed to approve it, and they ran it through. You know, they're a big publisher. They're the biggest publisher I've ever worked with before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're part of Penguin Random House, and so they did all these things that, like... like when they said they're going to do it, it made sense. But I was like, "Oh wow, you're gonna show this to a lawyer? Like, yeah. you're actually going to make sure that none of us are going to get in trouble for any of this."
I mean, and cool. In this case, you almost have to, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so closely follows the real history of this business, and you're naming names and situations, mm-hmm. and bouts and quoting from people's autobiographies. You really do have to get it right.
Yeah. I mean, and so they did some fact checking and stuff. They sent to a reader for fact checking, and then they had copy editors. And yeah, there's a bunch of different hurdles to clear before Chris could even get drawn on it. But then once you were drawing, I mean, it took you – how long did it take you to draw?
I mean, it took me the whole year, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, because 10 months. Yeah.
Not only is it 170 pages, but specifically when we're talking about drawing, there's 5 to 7 panels per page. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not like, you know, a big Marvel comic where you just one splash across two pages. I mean, this is a bunch of individual.
I love
panels.
The last time you read a Marvel comic was in 1994.
It's true. Actually,
I love that. Actually, I love that about you.
But I dabble in X-Men every now and then.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to change.
No, well. You're right, though. I mean, this is, you know, when you're writing a fiction book, you can choose your spots for these big moments. And, you know, it behooves you to do a big splash every once in a while.
Exactly.
And it helps for the storytelling. But with this thing, we, like I I don't know, I feel bad for having put Chris through all this, but like I came in and like there were, they said, hey, do the history of wrestling, do it all. Wow. Do cover different countries, cover from the very beginning as far back as you can possibly go, do it all. And you only have 170 pages to do it. And, you know, 170 pages is huge for a graphic novel.
Right.
To cover, you know, 140 years of history,
yeah,
across different continents.
It sounds like a lot of pages, and that makes you think that there's a lot of space to cram a bunch of stuff in, right, but it fills up very fast.
And so one thing I really enjoyed about the drawings was each one, no matter the scale of it, seemed to be completely infused with its own individual emotion.
Yeah.
Like I really loved the panels where you were showing like what was going on in the National Wrestling Alliance, like boardrooms,
yeah,
and how they'd be making tons of money and then crying because no more money.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was such an amazing arc, and I love how each individual panel just seemed to have like really be telling its own story. Is that the approach you took to it?
Yeah, I mean, I never like to, like, we do a lot of crowds in this book. We do a lot of groups of people. I never like to just phone it in on a guy in the background thinking like, oh, no one will notice that person. Right. I feel like everyone, because it's comics, you got the time to like look at every single face there. And I did not want to have anybody that was just sort of dead-eyed and just not doing anything. And especially in those panels that you talk about, like the boardrooms and stuff, you know, those were the few places where we were actually making up characters because they were just sort of stand-ins. They were proxies for you know, the National Wrestling Alliance at the time,
yeah,
you know, there, things
there
like
some,
that. Like,
there were some that we knew, right?
There were some that we knew, yeah.
Yeah, like, but there's some that we knew and there's some that we could look up, but a lot of them are kind of lost to history. Like, right, like we could find the list of names,
yeah,
for, like, the NWA National Convention,
yeah,
but no one in their right mind would be able to, like, pick those guys.
Right,
at all.
Yeah. And also, you know, the point of those panels is really just to take the temperature of that group at the time. So that's why, like, you know, especially or like the ones where they were fighting over like TV, you know, mm-hmm, like when TV first came into the picture, like, you know, I took those as opportunities to sort of create like, you know, cartoon proxies for,
right,
those things.
My favorite example of that is when you did so they're dividing up the cake of the country,
yeah,
right? Like all the NWA promoters, and then all of like the outlaw promoters are on the outside, and it's raining,
yeah,
and they're just stuck out there,
yeah,
watching,
yeah, yeah,
the cake. That's my favorite of those moments that,
yeah,
you did in that thing.
But I those are the kind of things that just for me in the way that I do comics, like I you know, the people who taught me, like my teacher Tommy Castillo, like he would always say like, you know, every one of these people in this panel's got to have their own story,
right?
Like, essentially, right? They've all got to. You've got to be able to look at them and go, like, you know exactly what they're sort of thinking or, right, what's going on with them, and you know, like panels like that are really important for that kind of thing. Like, I didn't waste anybody that was in like,
right,
a crowd, you know, like just weird background stuff. Like there was the Four Horsemen stuff of them like hanging out at like a bar or,
yeah,
something. You know, there's a bartender there. There's, you know, other bar patrons and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, it's great, too, because the attention to detail in the drawing kind of mirrors the attention to detail in the very, very accurate, precise, you know, detailed history you're telling with the story. How familiar were you with the story of how the business changed from appearing like a legitimate sport to kind of the professional wrestling we know? How much of that were you aware of before you started doing research?
I was pretty familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to do the outline without a whole lot of additional research.
Okay.
Once I did the outline, I kind of realized where the holes in my knowledge were and where I was going to need to kind of fill stuff in. And I was writing the scripts for these the same time as I was writing G.I. Joe,
right,
an ongoing G.I. Joe comic. And so I had like a in my head, like I had an idea of like how long it took me to script things based, mm-hmm, on writing G.I. Joe. And I got like 4 pages into this. I said, oh, no.
I've made a gross miscalculation.
No. Yeah, like it was like, oh, no, the next 3 months are going to suck. They're going to be awful. Because I got this thing due. Because, yeah, it was constant research. Because like I would, you know, just in the course of breaking down panel to panel, I would realize that I would need some additional information. I would need to confirm a date, or,
mm-hmm,
there would be conflicting, mm-hmm, information about when this match took place, or who they were facing, or,
yeah,
any number of a number of different things.
Yeah, yeah, and that didn't stop, you know, once the script was done either, because,
oh,
you know,
right,
just in terms of the research that I would have to do,
yeah,
in addition to the research that Aubrey had done, you know, there was a lot of questions that we were asking each other, even, you know, even after that, because, you know, even just visual stuff. Like, you know, some of the stuff in the book, there isn't a lot of visual reference. Right. So I was also talking to Aubrey a lot about, like, okay, this picture that you showed me in the script, like, it's this, like, is there any more, are there any more pictures of this guy, you know, or things like that, or even just confirming some of the visual stuff. We did find a couple things that we needed to amend, like, sure. while we were doing it.
And, like, I'm sure people will find more, you know, like, I've braced myself for it just because it's, course. Like, the breadth and the scope of this thing, it's, you know, it was exhausting. and so, like, I don't know, like, a really funny example that I thought was fascinating when we were dealing with it, right? Like, so early on, like, in the book, you know, we start with, like, carnival days, right. Like, up in, like, the 20s and 30s and stuff, and everybody's wearing trunks because mm-hmm. it's just what people wore to wrestle back then. And, like, me and Chris had a big, long conversation because, like, my gut was, well, everybody's, you know, it's just plain. Everybody's just wearing black trunks. Like, that's what people wore back then. And he reminded me, he's like, well, yeah, that's because it's black and white. Right. Photography. And yeah. I was like, oh.
Yeah. They could be wearing red. They could be wearing blue or purple. Like,
who has any idea what color trunks these, like, Joe, who knows what color trunks, like, Joe Stetcher was, like, a pretty big deal. That guy was a world champion. Does anybody know what color trunks he was wearing?
Wow.
No. Nobody. Yeah. So what wasn't a thing that got recorded.
Now, what color did you guys decide to go with for Stetcher's trunks, for instance?
I forget. I think we ended up doing black probably still.
No, a lot of
why fight it?
But you were smart about that. Like, you guys started using a lot of, like, earth tones.
Well,
like,
yeah, that was the other thing too.
To get visual and interesting.
I think the initial idea was to maybe try and make everything as colorful as possible. But, you know, when we're dealing with those sort of old time kind of things, you know, the point that I made was, you know, certain colors are on our color spectrum are not available in fabrics at that time.
Right.
You know, because they're not desirable also. So, I mean, yeah, you're thinking more earth tones. If they're blues, they're like grayed out blues or navy blues.
Yeah, because it's like cotton still then too, right? Like, it's not like the, I don't know what kind of space age material trunks are made out of.
I don't know.
Like, whatever it is.
So when you guys, you said you had to create an outline for this that kind of served as the pitch. So I'm assuming this is the pitch to the publisher so that they become interested in this material enough to want to pay for it to be produced and distributed and all of that. What do you think was the exciting thing in the pitch for them? Because I'm assuming they're not wrestling fans. I'm assuming they don't have a lot of personal investment in this material. What do you guys think it was about this story that got them excited about it?
So credit where credit's due. Patrick Barb, our editor, is a huge wrestling fan. He came down for the New Japan shows in Long Beach, and I hung out with him up in the Cow Palace ones earlier this year too. He listened to my podcast. That's how he came to ask me to pitch on it. So he's a big wrestling fan, but the larger assumption is correct. Right. I think that it was kind of a little bit of a, not a fight, but it took some explaining. It took some pitching from him to convince folks there that there was a story to tell, you know, because I think that a lot of people outside of wrestling, not people listening to this podcast, of course, but people outside of wrestling just think of, they think of wrestling as being really shallow and it's just this kind of thing that's omnipresent, but like that there's not a whole lot of artistry and it doesn't seem like there's much story there. So I don't know. I'd have to guess as to what it was specifically, but I think it probably has to do with just the depth, right? And the fact that, like, you know, we can trace this story, you know, like – the book starts and we have like cavemen fighting over mammoth bones, and like Gilgamesh references.
I really love that. I was struck like because you're so right. You don't think about it that way, but there are physical conflicts throughout history that are wrestling bouts.
Yeah.
But we don't think about them that way.
Totally. Hercules, I mean, most of Hercules' stories are him just wrestling.
Various monsters, right?
Monsters, yeah. Hand to hand, yeah.
Yeah, dude. Jacob and the angel in the Bible just fighting with each other. But yeah, I think that, you know, showing that like there is this vast history and that also there's all these like political machinations and rise and fall of different – because WWE and even before as WWF is this monolithic presence, not just in the wrestling landscape but the pop culture landscape globally. You know, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know, but WWE is number one with a bullet. And like there's – it's hard to even talk about second place, in which it's New Japan, I guess, but they're so far removed,
right
from what WWE
is. It's
a distant second. And so I think for a lot of people who aren't dyed-in-the-wool wrestling fans, they think, you know, wrestling isn't so much its own medium.
Mm-hmm.
They think that wrestling is just a type of TV that you watch, right? Like it's just it's like Gunsmoke or something. It's just like this one show that went on forever, and it's not its own unique medium and art form. And so I don't know, now I'm just kind of projecting, because that to me is one of the most interesting things about wrestling and getting the chance to do this book is explore it as its own specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
Chris, how big of a wrestling fan are you?
I mean, I'm nowhere near as big a fan as Aubrey is, but I mean, it's been, you know, I've talked about this a lot since we started doing the book, because that's usually what a lot of people want to know. But I mean, it's been in my life like since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I grew up watching it. You know, me and my brother would wrestle my dad in the backyard. I dedicated the book to my dad, you know, because we were the Flying Moreno Brothers.
Oh wow,
we're undefeated.
Classic.
I mean, you know.
Dad should have got one. He should have just one time.
No,
he should have
never.
He should have went over.
Yeah, he could never overcome us. I mean, like, I grew up with it with all my friends. Like, my dad was a Marine, so like on base, like they would have pro wrestling matches. Like people would come in. I watched like every movie that had anything to do with wrestling. Do you remember the movie Body Slam?
Yeah,
with Dirk Benedict, Roddy Piper was Fatu, I think, was in it too.
I think so.
A bunch of people are in it. I think Captain Lou's in it. I mean, that movie was amazing to me as a kid. Like I like wrestling infused everything. I watched the cartoons.
You're wrestling adjacent.
I played with the toys.
Like a lot of people are, and I think that's one of the exciting things about this is that, you know, wrestling does move in, you know, it rises and falls,
right?
Popularity wise, right? And so, like, but whenever you grew up. There was a period when it was really big, right? Mm-hmm. Like every decade, there is like a wrestling boom, practically.
There's generational touchdowns. I mean, like I showed my grandfather the Gorgeous George pages, and my grandfather grew up in Staten Island. Like he would watch him on television.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, like all the Mexico stuff, like he, you know, that was like, you know, huge for him. It's like, you know, every generation has that sort of experience with it, you know. So, like, for me, it's like I fell in and out of it. But, you know, just from hanging out with Aubrey, I mean, you know, I've been kept abreast of things, and even doing this book, like, I actually came out of this book with a lot more of an interest in what's going on right now, especially with all the indie promotions.
They're like, "Oh, is Chris a wrestling fan?" I was like, "He is now."
Right. Yeah,
like he knows more about it than most people just by virtue of suffering through a year of doing this thing.
And it's notable that it feels like you're a wrestling fan because those characters seem to be drawn with a certain sense of joy.
Yeah. I mean, I love all of it. Like that's the thing about it too is, and I was joking with somebody else about this, like in my comics career, I never really got to work on like superhero comics.
I see.
I did like one book with Paul Jenkins called Sidekick, but it was like a spoof of superheroes. Like this is probably the most superhero style book that I've ever drawn. And I think the characters in it are probably cooler than some of the comic book characters that exist. I mean, like,
there's a lot more skin for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. between like coming back to like drawing characters that I remember from my youth. I mean, like, I got to draw Captain Lou Albano. Like, that was my favorite. That was probably one of my favorite things. Getting to draw like Roddy Piper and stuff like that.
JYD you were really stoked on too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I was really excited to draw those characters. But then also just, you know, I love character. I'm very character oriented in terms of my storytelling and comics and stuff like that. And so, I mean, it was just such a wide range of all these different personalities and stuff like that. And that was really, there is a lot of joy there just because it was just so fun, you know, to sort of draw big, beefy dudes, you know, beat the tar out of each other.
Is there anybody that you wish you wish you could have fit in there that you...
Ernie Ladd.
Ah.
Ernie Ladd's not in there. Ernie Ladd is really important. Ernie Ladd, for people who don't know, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, he was a football player. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of guys in that era, they realized they could make a lot more money by wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started doing that. First in the off season and then just full time. And he was rad. And a lot of people now... I guess he needs to be older to remember that too. But like he would be like a authority figure on like WWE television and stuff like that. But prior to that, so he was this huge star, and he's a black guy, and he was a massive during the territory days. He was a massive national star, and was able to travel around all these different territories in a time when like not a lot of black guys could do that.
What era are we talking about here?
70s.
Okay,
is probably his height. You know. And, you know, 60s and like late 60s into the 70s. And the really interesting thing and the really cool thing about Ernie Ladd, I think, is that he was one of the earliest big black stars that Cowboy Bill Watts made down in Mid-South. Cowboy Bill Watts also was the guy who brought JYD to prominence, Natural Butch Reed, Iceman King Parsons, because he ran a territory in the Mid-South, and there are a lot of black folks who wanted black stars. And, like it wasn't like a social justice.
No,
move, and I
love that you make that point early on in the book because there's a rich history of multi-ethnic stars proliferating the wrestling business. Right. And on first glance, you might think, "Oh, that's nice." And at this time when things were so racially divided, you had this place where all these different ethnicities were represented. But like you were saying in the book, it wasn't based
strictly financially based.
Exactly.
And but that's what's interesting about it, because it still is nice. Like, it's cool. Like, that's a thing that didn't happen in sitcoms of the 1970s.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, so it's cool. And like Ernie Ladd is really significant, I think, because he, you know, and it's complicated too. I'm glad you asked this story. It's like this question, because I love the story, but it just did not fit into the narrative that we had laid out. Bill Watts has a reputation for being racially insensitive.
Right.
He's still alive. He's still kicking. But he's a man of his era, and he also was a wrestling heel and feuded with Bobo Brazil, who was another really important groundbreaking black wrestler, and he said some untoward things about that man in the 1960s that have not aged well. And, you know, context is everything, right? But Bill Watts not only made all these huge black names, like in his promotion in Mid-South, but he made Ernie Ladd became the first black booker anywhere. He was the first guy to actually be, you know, so there were black stars.
He was a booker in Mid-South?
He was a booker in Mid-South.
Interesting.
Yeah, man. He held the pencil and he called the shots and he decided who was going to win, when they were going on, how they were going to lose, all that stuff. So he's a really important figure. But I don't know. This was the tough thing, man. Like, we only had 170 pages and it was important to me that this book not feel. So a pet peeve of mine when people, whether it's any kind of nonfiction work, right? Documentaries, nonfiction comics, it bugs me. It drives me up the wall when it's anecdote, when it's just a list of things that happened, right? The name of this is the comic book story. And so it was really important to us that this feel like a story. And there is one. I think that there are these narrative through lines in wrestling history. And that's what makes it so fascinating. The repetition and how things come back around. The role of the McMahon family over generations, right? Like, and their influence on the medium. So like all that stuff is really fascinating. But what it meant though is in order to stay true to that and to stay on message and to stay on brand, we left a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. And there's a ton of things that I would have liked to have gotten more detail in and include, but just they didn't fit.
Yeah.
Well, something that did seem to fit, and I know that it's in there, but I haven't gotten to it yet. And I just spoke about it in the intro here, was about how wrestling has affected politics outside of the wrestling business. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, this is a thing that people bring up a lot, and it's been, you know, let's not beat around the bush, right? Like for like the past 2 years, there have been, it's like a deluge of think pieces that basically amount to, did you know Donald Trump was in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
You know, did you know that Donald Trump says these outrageous things, and it's kind of like a pro wrestler, isn't it? 1,000 words, right? Like we've seen a ton of those. Julian's laughing. That's how I know I'm doing good. We've seen a ton of this stuff over the past 2 years, and it's not wrong per se. But, you know, one of the big themes of this book, one of those big through lines that I mentioned, was this idea that wrestling has always been wrestling.
Right.
You know, people a lot of times want to draw like a demarcation line in the sand and say, oh, well, you know, in 1963, people still believed it was real. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Nobody did, right? Like, it has always been wrestling, and there was never this moment where it really changed, unless you want to go back to, like, the 1880s, when, like, in the carnival circuit, right? And similarly, I don't, you know, and so it's just a, in wrestling, it's just a continuing, it's like a continuing process where they move the goalposts and they kind of blur the lines between fact and fiction, and they will admit some things but still deny others, and then we'll use that confusion to pull the wool over your eyes. It's a magic trick. It's a con. And I think that similarly, you know, I don't think that, you know, the stuff that when people compare Trump to professional wrestlers, they're not wrong.
Right.
But, man, that's what, like, Plato wrote about demagogues in ancient Greece, right? None of this stuff is new. And I think that that's kind of – that to me is the takeaway.
Right.
That, you know, yeah, Donald Trump is using this stuff, but so are – I don't know, so have people for the past – forever. Right. like I was going to say, like, the past 20 years. And, like, you know, it gets worse or better depending on the era and, like, how people are doing it. But when it comes to – you know, the second Plato or the third, because we mentioned Plato in the – this is the third Plato reference in your podcast. Nobody else – none of your other guests are going to beat this.
It's true.
Plato talks about the difference between dialectic and rhetoric, right? Dialectic is a conversation. Rhetoric is speech used to convince somebody or to trick them into thinking what you want them to think. That's not new for politics.
Right.
Politics. Yeah. And, like that, and that distinction is something that Plato used. Plato and, like, you know, using Socrates as a mouthpiece, used to discuss how politicians and demagogues in ancient Greece worked. And that's not new. And I think, you know, if anything, the takeaway for me is that wrestling is – it's not that politics has suddenly become wrestling. It's that wrestling has always been an excellent way to look at politics.
Right.
But people are just now coming around to it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. One thing you kind of point to in that answer is another narrative that the book ends up pointing to a lot, and it's about kind of diffusing the narrative that people have only recently known that it wasn't completely on the up and up.
Yeah.
Why is that important? Why do you think that's important? It feels it like when you're reading the book, it feels like an important truth that you want people to understand.
Because it's part of the work.
I see.
Because the idea that it used to be true, like the idea that, oh, you know, what you're seeing now, this is artifice and this is fake and fix, but it used to be real. Mm-hmm. That's something that wrestling uses all the time. Right. It's something that they use right now with Ronda Rousey. Right. Like, oh, you know, Ronda Rousey is in the WWE ring right now, but she's also a former UFC champion. Right. So this is real.
Right.
But what we're seeing now is fixed. And so it's what we're talking about. I was talking about earlier in terms of moving the guideposts. Right. Or the goalposts and tricking people into kind of this complicity in one in like a half truth that then lets them buy into other stuff. So that way, when Ronda Rousey comes in and all of a sudden does this MMA move that you've never seen somebody do in a wrestling ring before and it looks kind of sloppy and weird, you might think, oh, dang, she's actually shooting on this person because we know this backstory, right? You go back a little bit further. This was used extensively in Triple H and Undertaker. And it was one of my favorite things about that build, like when they had those two WrestleMania matches in a row.
Right.
This idea that, you know, these are the last of the era. These are the last guys standing from the Attitude Era, and from the Monday Night Wars.
You know,
and
back when it was good.
That's the thing. It's like, no, these guys, you know, what you see now, it's all HD and people wearing makeup and these thin guys who are on Twitter and everything. No, no. Look at these old crusty bastards.
Look at their foreheads.
Yeah. This is real. This is legitimate. And so that is something that wrestling has always done. Mm-hmm. And it's a shell game. Right, it's a way of getting you. It's magic. It's look over here, you know, and like this is fake and this is fake, and we're gonna admit this is fake, so that we can kind of push forward this other falsehood in the corner of your vision.
And I think it's also important too that we get that out of the way right at the beginning of the book, because that's usually most people that aren't into wrestling's first response you talk about wrestling.
Right.
It's like, oh, that stuff's fake. By saying it right at the front, going like, yeah, it's fake. Now, do you want to hear what wrestling's all about? It sort of immediately takes off the table that one obstacle maybe that might keep you from, like, learning more about it.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going, yeah, it is.
Yeah, not only is it fixed, but that's what's good about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but also check out all this other cool stuff, you know, that sort of comes along with it.
Chris, quick question for you as we bring this to a close. Out of all of the eras that are talked about and depicted in the book. What was your favorite era to draw?
I mean, 70s and 80s. That was, like, my favorite because, again, that's just, you know, the stuff I sort of grew up with. And also, like, I got to draw – that's where, like, a lot of our cameos are. We have a lot of those celebrity cameos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I got to, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Muhammad Ali, Liberace. Cyndi Lauper, Liberace. I never thought I'd get to draw Liberace in a comic book.
Now, man.
I mean, you know, that's a real dream come true. But yeah, it also there's just there's so many like cool personalities. I mean, I get to draw Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes so much in this book.
Yeah, in so many different visual iterations.
Right. Yeah, know? All the different eras of both of those guys. Right. You know, it's like to me that's a real sort of flashpoint for where like you know where we got to today. You know, especially with like WWE and stuff like that. Like. It's a real sort of cool like genesis point for all that stuff. It's very exciting. Also, a lot of really great hairstyles.
So, a lot of good mustaches.
Great mustaches and hairstyles.
Like feathered mullets.
Yeah.
I know we've been talking about like what our follow up project's going to be. We're just like, wow, you know, like you've got feathered mullets and mustaches on lock. Like what
big
can we do with this?
Giant mutton chops.
Oh, you guys got to do the comic book history of porn.
Yeah. Clearly, what's next?
All right, I gotta go. I got research to do.
Well, Aubrey Sederson and Chris Moreno's new book is The Comic Book Story of Professional Wrestling, and it's available now. We've got a link to it in our show notes on this episode. Aubrey and Chris, thanks so much for coming in and talking. Your book is fascinating.
Thank you for having us
so
brother.
Much.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was really fun.
Yeah, good talk.
Yeah, great talk. Really good podcast you have here.
Man. Oh,
you were,
thanks.
You were great.
Well, I feel pretty good about it.
More Tights and Fights is coming up after this break.
Are stacks of unread books taking over your apartment?
Do you constantly miss your train stop because you're caught up in reading?
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
We party hard.
And by party hard, we mean read books.
So join us every Thursday on Reading Glasses, a Maximum Fun podcast about reading and book culture.
Get more out of your reading life.
We'll help you conquer your to-be-read pile.
Get out of that book slump.
And squeeze more reading time into your busy day.
Learn how to read better.
Wow, that was good.
Hey everyone, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
here to tell you about Storybreak, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop, I wouldn't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second.
Oh, come on!
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce's famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin. Up next, Danielle and I chat with Lucha Underground's Marty the Moth. Enjoy.
Hello, welcome back, and welcome to Gamma Ray, Gamma Ray TV, presented by Skybound and Nong Shim, the makers of those hot noodles. Thank you. This is the Tights and Fights stream. Tights and Fights is a podcast on the Max Fun Network, which is hosted by myself, Danielle Radford, with Hal Lublin, and with Open Mike Eagle, who can't be here today because he's too busy being a pitchfork, being a super famous, very talented rapper. Ugh.
I thought you were going to bury him just now.
Oh, no, this
he's
is
too busy being a musical genius.
That's how I bury him. That's what I do.
Good
when
friend.
I
that's a good
Chicago?
Friend.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good friend.
Who does that?
Ooh, my album was on every top 10 list last year. So yeah, he's too busy being a genius. So he couldn't be here this weekend, but who we do have, I am so incredibly excited. Y'all know him from Lucha Underground. Welcome, Marty the Moth.
Thank oh, hello, hello.
You so much. And thank you for joining us. We are so excited to have you here. We were playing some video games earlier.
Yes, it was amazing.
We played some video. I was not good.
Neither was I.
I'm not saying I didn't win, but dang.
It was great. No, it was fun. We had played Mario Kart on the Switch.
Yes.
And that controller is super, super small, but we all handled it. We rocked it, right? Yeah.
Did you do that thing that everybody does when they play a racing game where you move your entire body as you're steering?
Isn't that how you play the game?
I think you have to.
That is how you have to play the game. You have to do it in real life.
The government's watching us all the time. If we're not moving along with those controllers, then they won't know to tell those cars to move.
Well, I just actually went to the Purge City event here at Comic-Con, so I know all about the NFFA and the government doing things. I was drinking your water, by the way. It was great. It was good.
Is that Purge thing the one where you can go into a room and murder somebody and they won't arrest you for it? Secrets. We bring you the secrets here. That's what we're about.
Secret. You're not supposed to say that here.
Sorry.
I am so excited to have you here. I'm like bursting. So tell me a little bit about yourself, your life. How did you get into wrestling? When did you watch wrestling when you were younger? Tell me everything. Just give me the gap.
Oh, okay. Tell the story of your life.
Yes, yeah, story of your life.
I like long walks on the beach. I do. It's very fun. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. Well, mostly West Jordan, Utah, actually. Born and raised there. I went to private school my whole life. My parents, like, really wanted to have a good kid. They screwed that up. I actually saw wrestling the first time I was at my grandparents' house. My grandpa was a big fan of wrestling. Same with my uncle. And I remember sitting specifically, and I'll tell you why it's important later, but at my grandpa's house, leaning against the wall, I'm like, there's like 9 guys beating up this one person. That's not right. And I'm like getting all like into it, like, stop it. There's 9 of you. Stop hitting that person. It was like the NWO versus somebody, and they were just beating somebody up. Long story short, that was my first time seeing wrestling. My grandpa unfortunately passed away about 9 months ago. I bought his house to keep it in the family. So I actually realized it just the other day that, oh gosh, I can lean right here on this wall and I can see the exact point that I actually saw wrestling for the first time. So I thought that was kind of fun to see.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's how I saw wrestling. I was a stockbroker for Fidelity Investments. So it's a stock brokerage firm.
How long were you a stockbroker?
10 years? 10 years? 2003? 10 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Past 10 years. Something past that. Yeah. I got the job in 2003, 2005-ish area. Mm-hmm. It was over 10 years. I was a stockbroker for Fidelity Investments, and I worked for a bank before that. I was working in the finance industry and then decided I really like being in spandex and kicking people in the face. And so I stopped being a stockbroker and decided to do that for full time.
Was there a point where a switch turned on where you were like, I'm clearly doing the wrong thing? And you sort of think back to that young Marty who you were pulled in by storytelling.
Yeah.
Like immediately it made you feel something and you were connected to it and wanted to take action.
Absolutely.
What was the next turning point where you were like, I'm going to go do this. I have to go figure out how do I get trained? How do I become part of the world?
To be honest, I started first at a show called WWE Tough Enough.
I remember
that. In 2011, I was on a show called WWE Tough Enough. MW Healer 1987 says I should have won Tough Enough. I agree with you, and I was Black Yoshi earlier on that, so I thank you for continuing back on. I believe that was you.
That was.
But that's actually the moment where I realized, like, I could do this full time and for a living, and I'd actually be way more happier than talking about people in their 401ks. So during Tough Enough, I was doing pretty well. If you guys watched it, I never got on the bottom 3, and then I actually ended up breaking my leg. And I ended up having to get metal in it. But that was in the moment, like, I was this close to wrestling full-time for my life. So the whole time after I broke my leg, Stone Cold Steve Austin said, like, oh, you would have won if you wouldn't have broke your leg. So I'm like, you were the guy who said who won to the show. So if you would have said I won, I would have won. And I just started working my butt off to make it happen after that. Like, that was the turning point right there. It was Tough Enough. Like, oh, you had it. You touched, like, the living there full time for fun, and then you got taken away from you. So
did you get into Tough Enough? Like, was that just you saw an open call and you were like, all right, I'm going to do it? Like, what? How How do you get involved in that?
Absolutely
I'm just
not.
Keep digging until we get back to the day of your birth. But right now we're going backwards.
Well, 9 months before that, there was an accident.
And here I am.
A man and a woman who were sort of okay with each other.
Hey, they're sort of okay, at least for that hour. Yeah. I was from Salt Lake. I am from Salt Lake City, Utah. In there, there's not a huge wrestling scene. There is the school that brought me up, and that's essentially the Utah wrestling scene. So the WWE never comes and does Monday Night Raw or SmackDown in Utah at all. They just skip us. Wow. So I started flying myself to California. I flew myself to Texas. I flew myself to Colorado. So I just started going to as many shows as possible and flying myself out there to work extra work there. And then one time, the Big Show saw me, and he's like, I saw you in California, right? I'm like, yeah, yeah. We're in Texas. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I know. But I saw you in Colorado last week. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I know, I know, I know. So where are you from? I said, oh, well, I'm from Utah. Why are you here? I'm like, I want to make it in wrestling. So he's like, come here. He brings me in, he talks me to the talent relations guy at that point and says, this guy just flew 4 different states to come be here. So give him a tryout. And that's what kind of happened. It kind of started that way. And I got on their radar that way. And when Tough Enough came out, I didn't want to do anything. Like, I didn't want to do the voting thing everyone was doing at the time, whatever. But I didn't actually put in for it. They actually hit me up on Facebook, like, hey, we're from Tough Enough. We really wanted to put you in the, as a video. I'm like, okay, cool. And this probably totally is up from somebody. If I hit you up on social media and say, hey, I want to put you on a TV show, do you believe me? Because I've never heard of you in like.
Right. Listen,
that's what I was experiencing.
I'll get into the van, but there better be candy.
There you go.
That's
see?
My rule.
And maybe one window, like at least this big.
Yeah, yeah. Just a little, like a porthole.
Porthole. Like,
so that all they can see is your screaming
help
mouth.
Me.
Yeah, that's it.
But anyway, he sent me a message on Facebook, which made me not believe him. And then he said, hey, I'm from Tough Enough. I'd like you to be on the show. You're on WWE's radar. And I was on WWE's radar from flying myself out to all these places. And I said, screw it. And I put in for it. And that's what started my Tough Enough career. And honestly, I think without Tough Enough, I wouldn't be on Lucha Underground, which makes the happy ending to this story. where I touched it. I was close enough. And then Lucha Underground came along, and I was able to start here asking Dario Cueto to be part of the temple, and then now we're here, and I'm torturing people in dungeon rooms and stuff. So
yeah, you sure are. you definitely are. You, aside from, obviously, Lucha Underground, I know y'all are also in other promotions as well. Can you tell us a little bit about where else you're working?
Yeah, usually I go over to AAA in Mexico.
Heck yeah.
We did Triple Mania last year. It's almost coming up now. AAA, I wrestle every week somewhere, so it's like, which one do you want to talk about? It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing a lot of wrestling. Really, though, I've been kind of focusing on my YouTube channel, to be honest.
Tell us about that. What's going on your YouTube?
Well, I wrestle every weekend, so I just bring a camera along with me. And there's a lot of people interested in what happens to a wrestler and what does a wrestler do right before they get out on stage. Mm-hmm. So that's what I kind of show on my vlogs as far as, hey, here's me traveling. It's 5 in the morning. I'm getting up and going on a flight. And the progression to now I'm in spandex and ready to kill people.
Oh, wow. That's so it's literally just like day in the life. Like
I literally call it a day in the life of wrestling.
Oh, that's so, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. A day in the life.
Boom.
It's great because we, you know, as fans, you hear about what life on the road is like. Like you hear stories about it. So to actually see somebody documenting it as it happens, that's like a great, there's nobody else doing that. So you should go check out
it's
that
fun.
YouTube channel.
I try and be nice so I don't show all the stupidity because you obviously you don't want to see me like, and hanging out. But
and it's your story.
It's my story.
Your story.
And it's my story. So if I want to go, I'll do that.
Yeah.
What is the name of your channel?
YouTube.com/MartinCasaus. Mr. Martin Casaus. Literally, if they Google Marty the Moth, I'll pop up. I'm the green guy with the creepy face.
Green guy with the creepy
green
face.
Green guy with the creepy face. This is it. It was a born with it, so I'm sorry. I was born with it.
So many people have also talked about how funny you are. Not just like that you're so good. Just not that you're so good at just the wrestling part, but you're also able to bring comedy kind of into your wrestling. How did you start with that?
To be honest, it's my mother. She's crazy.
Yeah?
But she's crazy. She's a cartoon straight up. If anyone ever meets my mother, I highly encourage watching my vlog so you can see my mother. I put her on my last vlog, and I had to sit down and have a... We're going to watch the vlog together. Here we go. This is okay, right? It's happened already, so... She's fantastic. She's great, but... And her personality of just being a goof, as well as the... I love cartoons. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. Always. I'm wearing a Superman shirt, for heck's sake. I watched so much Animaniacs. I watched Looney Tunes. The Mask, Jim Carrey back in the 90s, back when he was all insane, was like my thing back in the day. So I just always wanted to be a cartoon. So Lucha Underground, you need to come out for the cartoon. I think so.
I'd watch the crap out of that.
I'd watch 100%. The crap out of that. Yeah.
Plus also, you could do it without hurting yourself.
Oh, I would love that very much. I would love that very much.
Just the talking and not so much the falling at the ground.
Oh, it's so much fun. When I got 7 staples in my head from the Weapons of Mass Destruction match in season 3.
Yeah, that's a hard one for me to watch. Is it? I think it's because once it starts getting too real, it's also like I don't like UFC. Like I like I like my fights fun and predetermined. I don't like people who are actually trying to hurt each other. I like when people are protecting each other because they're friends. That's the kind of fighting that I like. So when I watch those, I know that obviously y'all are really careful and you know what you're doing. But the Weapons of Mass Destruction matches, those are the ones where even I'm like, ooh, it's so much.
Oh, me too. I haven't showed my mom that one yet.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't.
All right, well, so we're going to get ready to wrap it up here pretty soon. Is there any, you have any last questions that you want
to
ask?
I mean, I could talk to you for 900 hours.
Literally.
Talk to you for 900 hours.
Come on, let's just be close to each other. I just want to hold you.
Y'all, hey, Tights and Fightsers, I need to document this auto. Like, right now, they are... snuggling.
Intertwined.
They
it's
are
a full embrace.
They are cuddling.
This
and
is
so the
tights
next...
and fights, right?
Yeah.
I get in tights and I fight. And
yeah, and this is okay. This is okay.
Okay, so yeah, tights and fightsers. We're going to go ahead and just keep that in our hat forever. Just Hal loving up all over Marty the Moth.
You're welcome.
Oh, I'm so happy.
It's such a tender embrace. I can say right now that I feel like I've reached another level of humanity.
It was just such a good cuddle. I'm so happy. Guys, this is the best weekend ever. So thank y'all
Go
so
Comic-Con.
Much. Is there any last things that you would like to say before we wrap up?
Number one, I love these guys. I love this whole weekend. Like, San Diego Comic-Con is... I've never been here, so I'm excited like a little geek. I love this place. I'm excited. Everyone's out being themselves, dressed up, having fun. Thank you, fans and wrestling fans, for being part of Lucha Underground and San Diego Comic-Con. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Martin Casals. Go to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Mr. Martin Casals. Just look up Marty the Moth. You'll see the green guy with the creepy face.
That does it for Tights and Fights. We are a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. This week, your hosts were Danielle Radford and Mike Eagle, along with me, Hal Lublin. Our producer is Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music as well, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long at facebook.com/groups/tightsfights and at tightsfights on Twitter and on Instagram. And remember, if you love the show, just hit those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, share us with all your friends, get the word out there about the nation of conversation. And finally, thank you so much to all the Maximum Fun members who choose to have a portion of their continuing monthly contribution come to our show and help keep the lights on when we're in the studio. We appreciate it more than we can say. We'll be back next week with our regular episode all about, you guessed it, wrestling.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.